Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Trailers. Today, I have a family short that's a little too short, but we'll get into that later. The short's got a very long title, so I'm just trying to screw it up. The Decline and Fall of Honeydew and Watermelon.
Extra Features with your host,
and I have two fabulous
Simon
guests.
Watson.
I have the animator.
Yes, Lauren Morgan Richards right here. The Decline and Fall of Honeydew and Watermelon.
And I have the lovely composer.
Hi. Josh Kovarik from Detroit, Michigan, Obedience Studios.
Welcome, guys. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Let's start at the very beginning. I think you have a very strong message in this short, but you really don't have a lot of time to tell me it. Like, you leave me bits and pieces, so why is it so short? Like, an extra 5 to 7 minutes, I think it would be perfect, at least for me as a viewer.
That is a really good question. I felt that because I'm animating without a company really behind me to do it, that there's a lot of wiggle room in that. I think that if I feel like the statement is there, that maybe there's not the extra dialogue needed and so forth to really stretch it out. I'm sure if I was working with other people in creating the storyline, that it could develop into, and it could also develop into a feature or something like that. It's just really the constraints around animating just by myself, and then also working with Joshua and TechSpeak around the music. Just kind of getting that statement out there. I can say this for all of us, we're outsider artists, so we're kind of thinking outside the box already.
So, Joshua, when you come onto this project or any project, how do you look at it? Do you look at the projects differently, depending on the theme? Or the problem is maybe you haven't seen the completed projects, you're coming in cold at the beginning. So how do you do things differently for each project?
Well, that's a great question. I'll start with this project in particular. Was different than some of the other ones. So, and also just to mention, most of the work, all the scoring work I've been doing is collaborative with TechSpeak. We've been working together for a couple of years now. So when I say I really mean the both of us. But for this project in particular, it was different from other ones. Usually we get bits and pieces of something, you know, maybe some style sheets from somebody. Lauren generally has something that's pretty well finished. And we're kind of freely just riff off of that. This one seemed to want real instrumentation in a way that, like, we haven't worked that much, Mike and I together. And so probably a lot more traditionally composed. So I actually dove into the movie. Actually, there's some really cool references to old Hollywood in the movie. Including a meta movie happening in there. And I actually went back and watched those, and I drew some ideas from those for a chord progression, for a general structure, and then sort of riffed off of that and started sending stuff back and forth to Mike. I think that's generally how it starts, you know, with most things. You just kind of hear something, you hear a few notes, you hear a combination of things, and you just build on from there, at least for a short project like this.
Okay, Lauren, I know it's a very short project, but I mean, I'm going to argue I'm going to get into the dark tones later. Do you receive a composer track and you're like, you know what, this is great, but I need it darker? Does that ever happen in the short?
Well, interestingly enough, I will work with a song that appeals to me first as just an underlying bass so that I can kind of see movement going on as well. But I know that what Joshua and TechSpeak will bring is more depth, and they will actually inspire other things. And they really have a good sense of how to be that extra person to move the story along. What he was referencing was Peggy Twistle, who was a young Welsh actress that came to Hollywood. And she was someone that made it on the role of 13 women. She tragically died from jumping from the letter H of the Hollywood land sign, and she was just 24. So that was part of the inspiration, just thinking about her and what others have done after that, because of how Hollywood is something that entrances you. And it's a bit of a machine, though. It can suck you up and spit you out. So, yeah, I wanted to really reflect on that.
Now let's get into that. You guys saying that you just told me things can get sucked in, and I agree. I mean, doesn't indie film suck you in? I mean, I do a podcast just on indie film. My own show with my friends are about Hollywood because they don't watch all the indies. So do you find that even the indie film market can suck you in? I mean, I do watch over 200 a year. So I would say I'm pretty sucked in by indies and Hollywood. So is there a change just because it's not a true system that it's safer in indie? Or is it not?
Let me just say that a lot of indie films are pieces of art. So there's at least the therapy of creating it or the exposure and experience of creating it that can lead to something else. Once you have your money invested into a project, that then becomes like with corporate sponsors and other things, that's when you kind of can lose yourself. You can think that that's. You can lose the healing aspect of art, right? Did you want to also say anything about that, Joshua?
Well, you just called to mind some conversations I've had over the years, with other filmmakers, people I've had a chance to work with, where it's, it's a really, especially in the indie world, in any sense, but in film, since we're talking about film here, there's this big draw to the various companies and let's say, movie groups, that make a whole lot of money. And if you can get a job as an actor or a anything, in those groups, you're kind of made in the sense of that you've made money. But the trade-off that I've heard people complain about, anyway, I've never had to face such a problem. But the trade-off that people have talked, is that you don't have time for anything else now. You're now in this system that like just sort of grinds you through it. It takes its money's worth out of you, I guess, so to speak. You said something interesting. You said safe, and I was curious, sort of, you were asking if the indie world felt safer in the sense that it didn't sort of do that to people, and it didn't seem to grind people up and spit them out in that way. And that was an interesting way. I've never heard it referred to as safe. What do you mean by that?
I mean, it's safe today. I mean, I watch Hollywood films, and people are always trying to better themselves, Hollywood films. So I think we see that in your short also, the similar thing. I'm saying safety because it's your project. You control everything. So you control your budget, you control your animation, you control your composer, and you control how you send it to me. Do you know what I mean? And you control where it's shown on the circuit. So to me, that's safe. I mean, you're not just dumping it in, going, hoping 1,000 people go to see it. You're making it because you want to make it. It's a labor of love. So that to me is a bigger safety net than me making extra features podcast goes to the film festival and I throw it out in the indie circuit and it bombs because nobody knows who I am and I'm taking a risk. I find indie film is less of a risk because you can get people to see it if you know where to put it.
Yeah, I guess it's relative. I mean, the hours spent, I can't even tell you how many hours of just spending animating it. So that's time away from other projects, family, and so forth. But then also the investment that you put into it yourself. Joshua's got all that tech behind him.
I
That's
saw that. It's
crazy
beautiful.
amounts of money, I'm sure. But at the same time, I'm having to keep up with what's the latest. So yeah, it's definitely, you got to believe in it to produce it. I actually create an art that's I consider as an imperfectionism, because some people might see it as kind of scratchy
I love it. I
in the
love it.
aspect.
It's
Thank
something
you, thank
so
you,
different than
thank
I'm
you so
used to.
much. And that's really based off of my illustration and books that I put out, and I've put out about 16 books of novels and short stories. So it really, when I got into animation, it was to be an extension of my books, and the short stories were absurd. They were very much like Edward Lear, who's one of my influences. See what I could do with paper cutout animation. I didn't have much success in that, even though a friend of mine suggested, hey, check out Ivar the Engine. Ivar the Engine was this Welsh program that was for children, and they used the little paper cutouts. Very difficult to get into that. So then I came across a program called Toon Boom, and they had this 2D way of making puppets. And so then I worked with that, and then I did a lot of like surrealist sort of concepts around that. And then Holly Doo was born.
Okay, so you don't know how many hours you spent in your animation, though, is what you're telling me. Now, is it on Cintiq or are you actually Bebop Boop? I don't know how else to describe it, but telling the characters what to do.
Oh, okay. So every day I spend about 2 to 4 hours outside of my day job creating, either animating or doing something else with the projects. And you put it on a rig. You put each puppet on a little rig,
Okay,
and then you're
that's awesome.
moving that through frames. So yeah, you're moving the puppet through frames. Hopefully my my internet is stable.
Okay, Josh, he'll be back in a moment, I guess. We'll
Yep, we
continue
lost him for a
on.
second.
He'll be back when he
Am
comes
I
back.
there?
Ah, we got you.
So,
You're back.
anyways, as I was saying, the puppet is on a rig system, and I move, and it's some. Oh, I'm sorry. These are the struggles of indie.
Keep going. Keep going. I got it. The puppet's on
Yeah,
a
you got it.
rig. You bring the rig across as you film it, I can presume.
Yep.
Okay. I
Got
got
it.
it. Okay.
So it's
Yes.
I've done some stop motion, so it sounds like it's stop motion, but without the physical element of it. It simply happens all in
Yes.
the box. Great.
You got it.
Correct. Yep.
I'm
Great.
with you.
And then a lot of just the almost like watercolor painting that I will add in, and the very dark shading. I didn't have the benefit of going to school for art, but since I was a child, I had dyslexia, so I would doodle a lot and daydream. I was put in like the special class, you know, and I made art my way of my language, basically. So I was always doing that. Yeah, I think a lot of probably outsider artists have a similar story. They just didn't have that path that they could take that others have the advantage of. So but they have the need to create art.
Do you get invited to like film festivals and things like that, say the composer, and you get to enjoy that, or they just say we don't need you and you get to stay at home all the time and compose?
No, this is actually a really rare thing to get to be a part of the interview. Lauren actually specifically invited Mike and I to join
Oh, I think
for
it's
this, so
great.
it's very exciting.
You're the only second composer I've had on in I think 15 years.
Well, it's really fun to, I love talking. I mean, I've been, involved in creative work my entire life as musician and visual artist. I love talking about work, so don't give me a chance. But no, we're here because we actually did the film we're talking about now just on. We got a best composer that I share with Mike from a festival that I was accepted to. I'm sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head exactly which one, which was a really big deal for us. There's not a lot of awards out there. It's we're really, we're basically team members. It's just it's kind of its own little weird thing, the sound design and audio.
Okay, well, jump into a new can because I'm going to be focusing on the film for the next little bit, just because I have questions. Where did the idea come from? The original idea? Did it come from the woman jumping from the thing or a
No,
doodle?
well, that's partly the inspiration, but interestingly enough, and hopefully this doesn't cut out. But my daughter was friends with a celeb. My daughter was friends with someone that was had a celebrity. Sorry, my daughter was friends with someone who was in a celebrity family. Okay, they
Okay.
lived in the Hollywood Hills, just below the Hollywood sign, right? And they had a play date, so I took her over there, and I joked to this celebrity, that wouldn't it be interesting if someone lived in the Hollywood sign? And honestly, it went from there. he kind of just let that idea go, and I took it from there. It was my idea, but I also was seeing if he was going to play around with the idea. But he's sort of in a way the Jornita character that's in this, the one that's living on the hill and has all the riches and gets to look down at the rest of the world in a different perspective. He's a good guy, but it's just that's who he is. And Walter, obviously, he's and he is about to jump from what Ivy Land scene. Holly's in this.
I'm not having good luck with the movie, Josh.
But in movie land, in movie land, the sign has depth and is able to have someone live in it. So that's an interesting little note there. But yeah, she sees Walter on a very stormy night trying to jump, and she saves his life, and they have a relationship from there.
Okay, Kitch's Diner, am I missing anything there? Is that a reference I missed to something? Can you not hear me? Lauren, can you hear me?
I don't know what the Kitch's, I'm not hearing him either. I don't know what the Kitch's Diner specifically references, but I do know that this film, and pretty much all the ones he's done, are chock full of like so
What?
many little things. You know,
That's
he,
what I figured.
yeah. The that's it kind of goes with that. You had mentioned the staccato pacing earlier of the thing and how fast it is. It's one of the challenges and one of the funnest parts of working with that movie is generally you develop when you develop themes for characters and for you know, places and events and things that are happening. You have some time to develop the theme. You can reference it. You can come back and forth to it. You know, something that's 4 minutes long, you know, I got three characters and three locations.
Yep.
It's a delightful challenge to savor, to like, to do all that development and get it all in there together.
Well, he is completely gone, so it's just you now, Josh. So, okay, I'm gonna ask you some more questions. Maybe you
Very
can
good.
answer them. Did you notice that she keeps a list of everybody? I think you're playing music over it when she's writing down. I think he's coming back. We'll try him out in a second. Lauren, can you hear me? No, he's not back. Did you think that was a reference to San Francisco Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge?
It didn't
So
cross
I'm
my
here, but
it.
I guess I'm competing with people with better bandwidth or something that I'm
So,
getting booted.
Lauren, can you hear me?
Can
No,
you
he can't.
hear me
Right.
okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yeah, I
Okay.
was just saying that I think I'm competing with other bandwidth
Okay, that's
here.
fine. We got Kitch's Diner. Am I missing a Hollywood reference there? With the diner, no reference? Okay, he's not listening. Okay. So, Josh, we'll just go back to you for a second. Did you notice when Walter is in the restaurant, there's a quick side like movement with sheets on the wall.
Tragic life and so forth. So the Kitch Diner is sort of like saying, the Kitch Diner is sort of saying, you know, like this is like a selling point, and people have to live up to that sort of standards of popularity. So of course Walter works there, and so that's surrounding him and making him feel even more sort of oppressed by that.
Okay, can you hear me okay now, Lauren? Because I have another question for you. Okay. There's a shot in the restaurant. It's a quick pan across the side. It has two sheets on the wall. All I could read was Slim's J, Walter, and it looked Mellon with a sheet. It looks like white sheets with some kind of writing. It looks like maybe a math or something. What is that a reference to? He can't hear me again. Okay, Josh, do you have any idea what that means? You know where I'm
No,
going, though.
I'd have to look back at it. I'd have to look back at it to see.
It is there. It's a very quick, you're playing music, he's working, and I was like, I'm trying to figure out what that is. Okay, well, okay, Lauren, you back with us? Can you hear us, Lauren, or no?
I am black. I'm back with.
He is not back, is he?
No,
Okay.
but
I guess I'll continue on the best I can. Joshua, when you're composing and your thing, do you ever think, no, I'm not happy with this, and you go back and change it after watching something? Or you're like, nope, I think I'm good the whole time?
So the first, definitely my preference to go back and work it. I love to go
Okay.
back and rework. I wish we had Mike here with us because he is the opposite. He is the opposite of that. I like going back and reworking. I like to polish things. I'll compose. Like for example, for this one, I had two piano lines and a bassoon line and a viola, and I roughly chopped those together for the length of the film, and I sent them to Mike, and I said, "This is kind of what I'm feeling," and he spent a half a day doing arrangement and sent it back to me. He was like, "Okay, it's done." I was like, "No, I'm just getting started." I definitely like to go back and polish, but I think for something like this too, something so short, you really only have time for it to be inspired one time,
Well,
and
that's
then
what I
just
was
roll with it.
thinking. I mean, you have a 4 minute, 4 seconds, I think it is. It's not even that long. And well, you run out of time, It's like me trying to look for notes and things to take. So I watched it twice just to catch things. Lauren, are you back with us officially?
Yeah, I am so sorry. I blame the
No.
NASA program going around
I
the
just
Earth.
blame the war in Iraq on whatever's going on. I just blame that. They
Yes.
need it. I'm not saying anything else, just blaming that. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a shot. This is a big question. I asked Joshua, he didn't
Okay.
know. There's a shot in the diner where you pan. It's literally a slide shot like this. There's two
Yep.
sheets of paper on a wall. One says Sims J, Walter Mellon, and I with a sheet of paper, two white sheets of paper right beside each other. I couldn't figure out what that meant.
Well, there is a lot of I don't know if you call them Easter eggs or something like that, but there are a lot of messages within the movie, and I like to add those because I want people to really take the time to reflect, what that could mean or what they're seeing. It's movies are supposed to be an illusion to some degree, and it could be as simple as it's a script that he has been dreaming about.
Hold on, there's two people's names on it. There's his name and another name. There's two guys working there. So I figured the sheet had to be one guy's sheet and the other guy's sheet. Because it didn't look like writing, it looked more like mathematician things.
I see, yeah. Well, that is some secrets that I don't tell, but
Fair enough. I know
there
I'm
is
pushing you on it, so.
that. And that's the beauty of doing indie work, is because you can get away with these kind of little messages that
Oh, absolutely.
the corporate America would say, nope, that's off the table. What are you trying to do?
Well, now you get
So.
podcasters like me that watch it twice to make more notes and little things because I have time. Now, we get to the end, and you state it's not the end of the story.
Yes.
Now, I understood there could be a second part. You do set it up for that. So, my question is there going to be a second part?
Only in the minds of the viewer.
Okay.
This is really it's the story's been told, and everything goes up from there, basically. And that said, it's they're looking to fly at this point. So things are looking, their perspective changed, in other words. Now Holly is painting from the heart of who actually should be seen in the world, those that care for one another and so forth, not those that are facades to us, right? So their perspectives change, and hopefully the viewer will see that and recognize it.
Joshua, how do you differentiate from one project to the next? You've already done a project with Lauren 3 weeks from now, a month from now. He goes, "Hey, I'm working on this." Can you compartmentalize what you've already done for him? Or in your back of your head, you're like, "Oh, he likes this kind of stuff. Maybe I should stick with that." Or do you completely start afresh?
So in general, I don't really have much problem jumping from project to project. I always have to, I have to have 20 things going on, so does Mike. I enjoy being a musician enough and have done it long enough that it's not really an issue. As speaking specifically to Lauren's projects, the approach between this film and the last one was so different for me, how we came together with it. I don't see it being a problem. I'd love to find out. I'd love to find out if it's hard or not to do it. It was fun. The last one that we did with him, he sent a YouTube link to Dame Darcy doing "Send in the Clowns," a version of "Send in the
Nah.
Clowns," and he said, "This is the vibe." And I probably listened to that like 20 times, and Mike finally wrote this bass line that seemed to, that was roughly based, on some part of the song. And we worked from there. So, who knows? I think
And
the mindset's always the
in this particular film, you had to sort of reference a lot of the 1930s and the 20s music, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, we actually went down some paths that we ended up using in the film. We've been down some paths with what they call gypsy jazz. That's not the right term for it anymore. I can't remember.
Oh no,
Jasmineau.
I know where you're
Yes.
going.
Jasmine
As you
Newell,
said.
and so and you know and you know Mike, I play all live instruments. Mike's all in the box, so I was like working on stuff with instruments. I mean, it got really complicated for a minute, but we didn't go down those roads, but we ended up not going down that way.
Lauren,
I
do you?
think yeah, go
Go ahead.
ahead.
No, you
Well,
go. We're short.
I was just gonna say that sometimes as an artist, you kind of get in your head and you think you should put something in, and maybe you shouldn't. Like what you're saying, with the little Easter eggs. So yeah.
What have you? What sort of things did you have similar experiences when you were animating this, Lauren?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of went off a few times. It's a lot of because. I don't do storyboarding. Instead, I was using like sounds. I was thinking about that initial flow of movement, that it organically starts to develop. I of course have a script that I work with, and kind of lay that out within perceived scenes. But it's sort of evolved, and then I go through several drafts later and say, I want this kind of effect going on, like the whole butterfly that comes up. That's a lot later that I developed that. The death scenes were developed a little later as well. And just kind of thinking about what are artists that inspire me that I can kind of like brush a little bit of their cloth into this world? So,
Okay. Let's move on to some fun questions. Your favorite film, because your first time on the show.
well, personally, I've been really into Crispin Glover films. I'm not sure if you're familiar with some of
love it.
his.
I
Yeah.
love it.
And I'm really hoping that he's coming out ahead with latest things going on in his life. He's quite good with surrealism too, and I appreciate that. I'm heavy on the Dadaism angle of things, so it's kind of like-minded.
Yeah, Dadaism for sure. Seeing your other work for sure.
Joshua, question.
It's hard to say a favorite. Off the top of my head, I think the old like early 80s sci-fi noir was like really what's in my heart. That's the if I could score anything I wanted to, it'd be like early 80s genre stuff, sci-fi and horror. And that's probably some of my favorite. You know, I just rewatched all of the Hellraiser series. Those, yeah. Anyway, could do it. But also, probably favorite era would be like mid-century musicals. I grew up with that.
Yes.
My mom, yeah, grew up with those.
Seven Brides for
I grew
Seven
up doing
Brothers right
musical theater.
here.
What's that?
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Stellar. Yep.
Exactly where
Yep.
you
Yep.
are.
Yep.
DVDs or streaming? Which one do you guys prefer?
The impact of what can occur producing a tangible object, I will always go with streaming first.
I see we're totally opposite.
Yeah, you go
I know
for DVDs.
you want to hold something, probably, right?
I just find there's too many things I watch that are not available on streaming. Sorry, Josh, what are your question? Answer the question, then I'll get into it.
That's great. No, I actually that's a great point. I like what streaming does for what the ability to stream does for artists. Not necessarily talking about streaming services, but just simply the access to internet
Oh.
and the music, you know, the equivalent for musicians for sure. It's a, you know, I came back being a musician. I'd been away for almost 15 years working in visual arts, and the world had radically changed. I came back about 5 years ago, and
Oh, wow, yeah.
It's really great. But there's something about physical objects, though, man. I'll take a record any day. So give me the musical equivalent. I mean, give me a video equivalent of that.
I will say I'm leaning more towards streaming. Now we have Tubi and Freeview. They're actually showing films I can't find. I mean, I'm just a mass consumer. I mean, besides my show, I look for the weirdest things you've ever heard. Like, I'm
You
just going to
should
do a
look.
reference.
You should look for the. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to finish for a second. I'm watching Killer Image with Michael Ironside. And I actually have a physical copy I found for ages ago. So, I mean, it's just, I have a 75-inch TV and I enjoy watching on the quality of the DVDs I just like better. So, go
Well, so
ahead.
you mentioned Tubi, so I have a Weird West series on there called The Goodbye Family. So if you check that out, it's a lot of that gothic pen scratched effect that I do.
Okay, I did have one more question, but I want you guys to tell everybody. We're going to stop there because this is good. Tell everybody where they can find your things so you have enough time.
So, best place to go is either Tubi for my animated series, The Goodbye Family, or you can go to laurinrichards.com. That's LaurinRichards.com.
You can find me at on Instagram at j.koverik at Instagram. Most of the work I do is underground. It's not quite immediately available, but through that you can find a lot of cool stuff I'm up to. And then you can look up TechSpeak at techspeak.bandcamp to see his projects. He has a stellar new album out, lots of great work happening.
And one of the amazing film festivals we'll be at is First Glance, which is going to be in Philadelphia. That is around May 7th through the 10th.
I want to thank you both for your time and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you so
Delightful,
much.
Simon.
It's good
Thank
one.
you.